If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is the Wells Cast with Wells Adams, an iHeartRadio podcast.
What up, everybody out there? Yep, this is the Wells Cast. With your boy, Wells Adams. How's everyone doing? Me and myself, I'm doing fine, I guess, except for the fact that last night, Chris Harrison and company decided it was a good idea to replay my season of The Bachelorette and dedicate a solid 3X of the show, aka like 35 minutes, to making fun of yours truly. And I will concede that, yes, there was a lot of funny moments with me on that show. But if you think about it, it was a lot of JoJo and Chris just trying to kill me, which kind of rude. Hey, let's have this skinny guy go pretend to be a firefighter all morning long and see if he won't die. Let's shove this kid down a sand dune with a snowboard attached to his foot after he's been drinking in Uruguay for 13 hours straight and see if he survives. Hey, let's make him go on this weird one-on-one date where they literally put me on a giant hamster wheel and shot me and gave me a fake bag of blood. At that point, I should have known, hey guys, listen, I'm getting the feeling that you don't want me on the show. Getting the feeling that I'm the punching bag here. But it was fun to relive all that. Listen, at the end of the day, that show has given me so much. So, gotta be grateful. And it's all in good fun, right? Can't laugh at yourself? Man, you got props. Super excited for the show today. For the most part, I'm interviewing people on this show that I don't really know. And so it's interesting to hear their stories and kind of see how they got to become successful. But every once in a while, I get to interview someone that I do know. And it's always something that I look forward to because, one, if I'm friends with somebody or know them, it's because I think they are rad. And I want to showcase that radness to everyone who listens to the show. And then also, sometimes I hear stories about my friends that I didn't even know about. And I'm like, wait, what? Really? That's cool. So it's a learning exercise for me as well. I met this guy like, I want to say like 3 years ago. We both were Nashville boys who have decided to move to Los Angeles to pursue bigger and better things. Now, granted, the things that he's pursued are much, 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 much bigger, but whatever. We're the same. You guys know what a five-tool player is? It's a baseball term that is used to describe someone who can do everything. You know, they can hit, they can run, they can field, you know, they can play offense, they can play defense. They can do all these things. To be a 5-tool player in baseball means you are the best. That's kind of what this guy is. And it's funny because he wanted to be a professional baseball player growing up, but that didn't work out. And like we find with most of the guests, there's usually something else that everyone is like striving to be. And then all of a sudden, some sort of paradigm shift occurs. They get thrust into a different calling. I mean, let's be fair. You probably know him for his role on the hit show on Fox called Glee. Dude was nominated for Screen Actors Guild Award for his work on said show. But he's also a phenomenal musician. He grew up under the creative wing of his father, Grammy winner and country top charting songwriter, Paul Overstreet, who penned iconic hits like When You Say Nothing at All, Forever and Ever Amen, and She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy. And I also think Some Beach, Somewhere. This is a kid who wanted to become a professional baseball player, was a varsity football player in high school, but his senior year blew his knee out, popped that ACL, and then all of a sudden it was like, what do I do now? His dad said, hey, pick up that guitar and do some with your time. And then everything changed. He's got a new song out right now called What You Need, and I'm telling you, it's what you need to go listen to because it is phenomenal. We'll play a little bit later on in the show, but coming up on the Wells Cast, my friend, extremely talented, Cord Overstreet will be joining us. Stick around. This is one you do not want to miss.
Time is a luxury for us, especially if you're a mom. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results. Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews? Were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com for 20% off with code GETDIME. That's Dime beautyco.com, code GETDIME for 20% off.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Yo!
Oh, there he is.
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, you know, we're just living during the end of days. It's fun.
I have some serious conspiracy theories with that stuff. I'm right there with you.
Do you want to get into that? Should this be the Cord Overstreet conspiracy theory podcast?
I mean, I have a lot. I have a lot of crazy ones.
What's leading the pack right now for you?
Okay, my latest conspiracy theory is, which it might be real, but I don't know. The Pentagon came out with the UFO thing that happened that the Navy released with the videos of like the Tic Tac thing that's like moving around, and yeah. They're like, yes, it was a real UFO. And I was like, why is the Pentagon? It was right after quarantine. I was like, why is the Pentagon telling us all this? I bet you what's going to happen is they're going to come out with something saying like, this is a biological attack by aliens. And that's how they take over, as like, instead of actually having a war with humans, they're just going to get everybody sick with this virus and take over the planet and grab all our resources and then bounce.
Have you seen War of the Worlds?
Yeah.
That's like the opposite of War of the Worlds.
But I mean, honestly, if you don't want to have to do any kind of, lose a bunch of aliens, that's the way to do it, I guess.
You know, they wanted to like storm Area 51. You know, everyone's been like dying to like find out about the aliens. And then in the middle of the pandemic, they dropped this knowledge and it doesn't seem like anyone gives a shit.
No, it's like, oh yeah, aliens. I'm like, the government just told us that everything that we've been, thinking for the last 100 years Yeah, there's aliens and they're flying around. They're faster than our Navy ships.
But maybe they're cool, though, you know?
Maybe they're like stoners and bros and just, you know, chill.
I wonder how long it would be for us to corrupt an alien. You know, like what if they were like super high functioning, obviously extremely intelligent beings? And like, how many frat parties would we need to take him to before he just becomes Gary, that stoner that we all know?
I think two, at least. At least two. You need, like, the first is the introduction. The second one, he's picking up beer pong.
Yeah.
And, you know, figuring out how to, like, properly do a beer bong rip.
I think two is right. I think that's a good number.
They could look exactly like us. That's another theory.
Are you into that whole, like, green lizard man thing?
No, but now you got me scared.
Oh, yeah. There's this whole conspiracy theory that there are these lizard humans that, you know, like wear human skin and like run the earth. Look into it. It's going to blow your mind.
I've heard that. I've also heard there's like a hotel for aliens, like underground. Basically, they give us technology and we trade them. I don't know what we have to give an alien, but they give us
beer bombs and beer dye. We have
great underground hotels that we're letting them stay at.
Have you heard about the conspiracy theory of like what's under the Denver airport?
No, what's that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I got a couple homework assignments for you to look into.
Oh, my gosh.
There are all these like weird signs and paintings and things inside the Denver airport. And the thought is that underneath the Denver airport, there's like crazy bunkers and tubes and everything underneath the Denver airport. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around. But the top one is when you get on an airplane, you don't really know where you're going. You just assume that you're going to the right place. But you could totally be going to the wrong place, and you would never know, you know?
You're going to a different dimension.
Yeah. I mean, so the thought is that if it goes down, which it is going down, that people could be getting on airplanes being like, I'm going to go see my mom in Phoenix. And then you show up at the Denver airport, not even knowing. And then all of a sudden you're in this like underground bunker if like the world is ending.
I would probably say that's not actually a real thing, except I've been to Denver and Denver people are weird.
Yeah, I know, right?
So that's like the only scenario where I'm like, oh yeah, that's a possibility.
If this is my last conversation with anyone, I'm excited it's with you, Cord.
Same here.
Welcome to the Wellscast. Aside from all the craziness of conspiracy theories, how is everything going for you?
It's good, man. You know, just trying to stay as busy as possible and work as much as I can from home. And I'm going to Nashville. My sister's about to have a baby, so trying to knock that out. My mom's birthday, and so it's I'm gonna hit 3 birds with 1 stone.
Nice. We've known each other for a while. Did I first meet you like way back in the day, like during my Lightning 100 days in Nashville?
Possibly. What year were you there?
2007 to basically a year and a half ago. But I feel like I met you, and I could be totally wrong, but how many Cords are there in the world?
So I haven't met another one, so.
You know what's really funny? My brother's name is Cord.
You're kidding.
Not a joke. But he doesn't have the H in it.
Oh, well.
He's telephone Cord, you're guitar Cord.
Exactly.
Your Cord is cooler than his Cord.
Yeah, I definitely got teased a lot growing up, and then it just became, oh, yeah, that's a cool name.
Yeah.
I think everybody that's has like a weird name get when they're a kid, and then like when they're older, they're like thankful that they have some, you know, it's not like John.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like Wells is, that's, I've never met anybody else named Wells either.
Yeah, I've only met a few of us. We're few and far between, but Cord, I think, is even more unique.
I think the first time I remember like us having like a full on like kind of conversation was probably, it was probably like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago at some Vanity Fair, some Golden Globe thing with you and Sarah.
It was some award show where we hung out and we ended up getting, I feel like, well, I got drunk. I don't know what happened with you.
I was definitely toast. Those are the nights that when the next morning you end up hating yourself.
Yeah. And I just remember we exchanged numbers and the next morning I was like, I got someone's number. And I think Sarah was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I was like, listen, just give me this one. All right. I have a new friend. Leave me alone.
Well, I remember we were both like hitting it off because we were talking about Nashville.
Yeah.
Anybody that's from Nashville is immediately like just cool in my opinion. Not now because all the everybody's now imported that lives there. So.
Oh, I know, man. It's completely different now. Lower Broadway is probably where Corona started, to be fair.
Oh, 100%, 100%, 100%, like at Acme or at maybe Losers.
I've got a feeling it is Kid Rock's Tootsie. Bar. No. Tootsie's and Robert's Westernworld and Acme, those are reputable establishments. It's like Kid Rock's Bar. Where
what's Kid Rock Bar's name?
I don't know, but I just know that there is one.
There's a Kid Rock Bar, and then there's like a Luke Bryan or like Dierks Bentley has a bar. I don't know. They all have.
And Florida Georgia Line's got a bar. Here's the question, Cord. When are you going to open up a bar on Lower Broadway?
I'm thinking about it right now. I'm going to go down there. I'm never coming back. It's going to be called Cocktails with Cord.
I like that.
It's literally only just straight alcohol. There's no mixing involved. It's like, do you want ice or do you not?
Yeah. That's like the Coyote Ugly bar, right? Remember they only served like Jack, Jim, Jose, exactly. And beer.
And I end up getting up and dancing every other hour. I'll get up and dance in the bar in like Davy Dukes. And I probably won't wear a wig. I'll probably just do it just straight up.
I'd go there. Worth the price of admission for sure. Well, anyways, I'm excited to have you on the show. You've got a song out right now called What You Need.
Yeah, I do indeed.
I've been digging on it, man. I was told that you might play a little bit of it. Are you ready to do that, or do you want me to play some of it from the stereo? What do you want me to do here?
I mean, I could play it from my stereo or your stereo or on the guitar, either way.
What do you want to do? It doesn't matter to me.
Let's play it from your stereo.
Okay.
Pills to help anxiety. I would take the mess you leave if I could give you what you need. A temporary fix for the storm at the end of the night. Calling out my name, but it sounds like you're reading a line. I don't really care, I could drown in the waves that you call. First, it kind of feels like it's real when you string me along. I could take the loose and sleep.
All right, dude. I just got to say, I am obsessed with this song.
Oh, thanks, man.
Just hear me out, all right? Huge Bon Iver fan.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off kind of Bon Iver-y, right?
Mm-hmm.
My one thing that I've always been annoyed with Bon Iver is he doesn't deviate from that effect a lot. And a lot of times I'm like, I want to hear Justin Vernon's voice because I know it's great. And you did the thing that I been wanting him to do for so long, is that effect is so cool.
Contrast.
Yes.
You know, come in and out of it.
And you've got layers to it anyways. And obviously the lyrics are just beautiful. So tell me about What You Need.
Well, thank you. First off, that was one of those songs where it's like, a day before everybody got locked down, we wrote it and kind of just had a 2-hour therapy session before we went into the lyrics. And then I kind of just had, while I was talking about everything, I just kind of started taking notes on specific things I was saying. And the song kind of came out. It just kind of like happened really quick once we got through with the therapy session. The song kind of for me was, you know, I had this back and forth kind of relationship. It just never was right. It was one of those being partnered up or paired up with somebody that it was just everything was challenging. And it was like all these obstacles were in the way that weren't really there. And it was like they were almost their own worst enemy. I was kind of coming from the position of like, well, even if, you know, you can't have somebody, or even if, you know, you can't change nobody, you're not going to change anybody. The kind of unconditional love that you kind of sacrifice what you want to give somebody what they need. You know, you would take the mess, the disaster, everything, if it could help a little bit, but it never really does. And so it was kind of that turmoil and that kind of being stuck in limbo. It was one of those songs that once I kind of got what was going on out of me, it kind of just wrote itself.
Was it one of those that was done in 15 minutes? Because you hear stories of that, like some songs, they just kind of ooze out of you.
I think the verses kind of came for me really easy in 15 minutes. And then I had the title, What You Need, because I usually work off titles. And then it's trying to figure out what's going on with you, how you make that fit into a song. I kept going back and being like, you know, I would take the worst, and that would mess me up the worst, just to try to make this person happy. And it's not healthy and it's not good. And so once we got the chorus, I kind of just was like, I just said, I was like, temporary fix for the storm at the end of the night, you know, you're calling out my name, but it sounds like you're reading the line. So it's like, it's you're in it and you're, you know, it's bad, but you're hooking up just because That's what people do in a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
And so it kind of goes, I don't really care. I could drown in the waves that you cause. First, it kind of feels like it's real when you string me along. So it's just kind of this bad addiction with another person. All that stuff, the verses just kind of flew out in probably, yeah, like 5-10 minutes, like you were saying. Like the good ones kind of, or the ones that literally mean something in me, always kind of stream of conscious.
Well, the song's freaking amazing. I don't know if anyone told you kind of the genesis or the idea of what this show is. Effectively, it's an origin story show. I like to find out how the hell successful people became successful. Like, what were the avenues, the roads that you took to get where you are now? I mean, like, obviously everyone kind of knows who you are from Glee and from your music, but how did you get there? And usually it seems to a lot of people that, like, it's an overnight success, but in reality, overnight takes years and years and years. So I was wondering if we could go through and you could tell us your story on kind of how you became Court Overstreet.
All right. Well, yeah, it's a long story. But once upon a time, my dad's a country music songwriter. So I grew up doing music. And that's kind of something that I just always done and not really thought about it. Like, just kind of did what my dad was doing. He would have, when we were little, he would have I'm one of six kids, but he would have his kids come out on stage and he would introduce each kid and they would say something into the mic. And I was probably like, he tells a story all the time, but I was probably like 2 or 3. There was this long runway and he was doing these like big arenas at the time. And there was this long runway at the end of the front of the stage. And when he called me out, I walked right past everybody, walked to the end of the runway and struck like a guitar pose. Like I was playing like air guitar. And then like the crowd lost their shit. And that's like one of the stories that, like, that was probably the first time I was on stage. But I wanted to be like a pro baseball player pretty much, you know, 5 until 18. That was just like my, you know, I mean, I think every kid wants to be a pro athlete at some point. But I did that until like pretty competitively until I was like 18. And then in high school, my senior year of football, I ruptured my ACL and was done. I remember being on like oxycodone and on the couch, pretty drugged up. And like the day after surgery, and my dad, I was playing video games or something. My dad walked in and he's like, turn that damn game off, write a song. And so that's like the first time I ever wrote a song. And then after that, I couldn't put it down. And then I've been doing like acting stuff and like little theater stuff here and there. I'd always wanted to, you know, do comedy movies and, you know, act. And I decided to move out to LA at like 19, did like a little indie movie that I don't think anybody ever saw or will ever see. And then moved out here and started like auditioning and stuff. And 6-7 months into living out here, I booked a ABC pilot. And I was super stoked on it and was, you know, I mean, the first pilot anybody books, they think it's going to be the biggest show ever. I signed with this new manager and she has a client that I'm still friends with now. Do you know Jess Soar?
No.
She's one of my good friends, but she was having like her 23rd birthday or something at like, back then it was called Truesdale. So it's Bootsy Bellas now.
Yeah.
I was probably 21, barely, or no, maybe I was underage. I was underage at this party drinking. We go to the party. I'm, you know, kind of mingling. She's introducing me to a lot of people and drank, and I lost my voice. So I was shouting over like the music, talking to people. Next day I go to shoot, you know, the pilot, and I felt fine, but I couldn't speak. So I did like, after we did the pilot, I did a full day of ADR and I got recast on it. I was like, oh, I was so bummed out. I was like, oh gosh, my agents are going to drop me. I'm never going to work and do anything in this town again. And was just stressing. Then 2 weeks later, I get a call from my agent being like, hey, you want to go in for the show called Glee? I hadn't seen the show at all. And so I was like, what's Glee? And he kind of filled me, it's a musical show. And I was like, well, can I bring my guitar? And so I bought my guitar and did the auditioning process. Called me back that night. They were like, hey, we chased somebody to get you to, you know, to come back and sing another song, but you'd already left. Can you come back, sing a song a cappella? Did that, did like 3 weeks of auditioning after that. And then it was kind of just off to the races with that show for like the next 5 years. It was kind of ironic that I ended up being able to be on a TV show where I could do music. And that kind of pushed me more into exploring music, because I never really thought of it or took it like as serious as I started to once I got on that show. And it was pretty much like a boot camp for performing. So I mean, I had, you know, no experience didn't really know how to, you know, move on stage, didn't really know how to dance. And then getting thrown into this boot camp, it kind of changed kind of my trajectory in a really cool way. And then I started writing a lot and, you know, living more and getting a lot of, you know, stories to tell just through life and through the show and a lot of experiences. And then, yeah, I mean, so it was just kind of weird how all that stuff kind of, because I missed out on one opportunity, thinking, you know, putting all this importance, thinking that you know, the world was ending because I missed one thing. There was always some other door that was better than I could have imagined that the universe had kind of opened for me. So,
you know, it's funny. That's a common theme on this show. I had Dave Coulier from Full House on recently.
I love Dave.
He's the best and super sweet. And we just filmed this cooking show together, but he was on the show and he was telling me the story of how he booked SNL. They were like, you got 10 days, you're going to New York, break your lease and get out. And so he did, sold all his stuff, packed his bags. And 3 days beforehand, Lorne Michael calls him and is like, hey, listen, we've been thinking about it. You're just too similar to Dana Carvey. So we're not going to hire you. In his mind, as a comic, that's all you want is to get to SNL.
Yeah.
And that was in 1986. And 2 months later, he booked a pilot for a show called Full House. You know, we're talking about it. It was like, thank God that didn't hit, because the greatest thing in the world happened to you 2 months later.
That works in mysterious ways. I mean, he's like, you're one iconic show.
Yeah.
Where it's cast of like 40, 50 people, you know, I mean, it's just, they're always circulating in and out. And then you have this other iconic role and show that still people freak out over.
Yeah. Your dad's written a bunch of iconic country hits. And I always go back to, you know, that Garth Brooks song, and your dad might have written this, I don't even know. You know that one song that's like, one of God's greatest gifts is unanswered prayers. I always think about that. You know, we're not in the same industry, but it's the entertainment industry. And you have to have that mindset of, maybe this wasn't supposed to hit, you know, like maybe the next thing.
You got to be able to pivot or just be opening to letting other things just come to you. Every time I've ever tried to reach for anything, it's really never landed. I mean, the same way with songs, like, you know, my dad he did a song for Blake Shelton called Some Beach, and he wrote the song She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy for Kenny Chesney as well. And so he was like close with Kenny. He was on the bus and they went to one of Kenny's shows and he was on the road with Kenny, and he's playing Some Beach just on the acoustic. And he's like, he'd just written the song and Kenny is loving it. And he's like putting his ear up to the guitar hole while my dad's playing it. And so my dad was like, oh, this is for sure a Kenny Chesney single. They talked about cutting it and Kenny just never cut it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my dad is, you know, he's probably bummed out at the time, but then like Blake Shelton comes along and nobody really heard of Blake. And then it was like Blake's first number one. And a lot of that stuff happens all the time. Like, especially, I mean, I think he had Keith Whitley record On the Other Hand that he had with Randy Travis as well, but they'd never heard of Randy Travis either. And he had a bunch of other people that were going to cut Forever and Ever, Amen, and On the Other Hand, and like all of Randy's stuff. And my dad was like, oh, let's give a shot on this young, you know, kid, Randy. And then Randy became Randy Travis. So there's a lot of cool stories he has with just, you know, not forcing it and letting the universe kind of dictate where it goes.
Do you remember the name of that first show that you lost because your voice was gone the next day?
Yeah, it was called No Ordinary Family. And it was with Michael Chiklis, Julie Benz, and like Kay Panabaker and Romney Malco. And so there was like a bunch of, and Romney Malco was a 40-year-old virgin, and I was a huge Judd Apatow, Steve Carell fan, and he was one of the main guys in that. And so like getting to work with him and then Chiklis from The Shield, and this is like right around Fantastic Four, I was like, oh, this is freaking awesome. And then the show made it like 8 episodes, I think. Things work out how they do, but that's kind of like where I am right now as far as life goes is, I think all of us are like, we don't know, nobody knows where anything's going. Having the ability to look at something like, you know what, whatever kind of comes to me, I'm open to it, but not being in that mindset of trying to force something to happen. And I just think it's just, that'll make you insane.
I want to go back a little bit to the beginning. You know, you were a ball player, you blow your knee out. I find it very, this is not funny, but funny, that like the most sad bastard guitar playing shit I've ever heard is like, I was on the couch, hopped up on a bunch of codeine, and I wrote a song.
I mean, the song was so dark too. I think I just like watched Walk the Line, yeah, and it was like this Johnny Cash, like it was very much a story song, and it was called Death Row.
Nice.
So it's like, clearly this poor 17-year-old kid is on some serious painkillers.
I mean, obviously you come from a musical family from who your father is, but were you always like a good guitar player? And like, can you play a bunch of instruments? And were you always just like a naturally a good singer?
I mean, I can play guitar and piano. And I mean, I can play piano by ear, like enough to where I could write a song or play it, but I'm not like a great piano player, but I started playing drums when I was like six. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't built for drums. And I picked up a guitar when I was eight, and my mom would drive me to guitar lessons, and my dad would show me some Jim Croce stuff here and there and like learn how to play just like his favorite songs. And my parents really facilitated, or they really encouraged us to explore music. And we grew up in like a very Christian household, but it wasn't like Christian music. It was all like the Beatles, Tom Petty, Elvis. Like my dad had this collection of Elvis records that I used to, when I was like three, I would sneak down into it was like the basement, but we turned it into this kind of music game room. And I would sneak down there and I would be gone for all day just listening to probably like 10 different Elvis records from front to back. I'd come upstairs. My mom wouldn't even, we had six kids, so she wouldn't even say anything. She's like, oh, hey. I'm like, thinking back, I'm like, you didn't wonder where your three-year-old was all day? I got five other ones. But so they just put great music in front of us. So from the time I could sing and play guitar, I was playing other people's music. But it started with, I never sang in front of anybody seriously until I was probably like 17, because I would always do impressions of country artists, mm-hmm, or Elvis or anybody. So I didn't really know what I sounded like. And I was like, well, people are going to judge me for my voice. But if I'm doing a goofy impression of somebody and, you know, being stupid, you know, I'm going to get some laughs and nobody's going to think I'm taking it serious. You know, so there was like that fear initially of not being good. In order to like override that, I just tried to do impressions and be funny. And that's why I'm always doing impressions now.
So you decide to pack up and move out to LA when you're pretty young. Well, how did your parents take that?
My mom still says to me whenever I come back, you know, in town, she has like an emotional moment. She's like, well, we didn't think you were going to be moving out there and be out there from like till now. She's like, we never really got to say goodbye. It kind of just like all of a sudden just one day just happened. And how it happened is I came out here. She came out with me when I was 18 for 2 months to do some auditioning in the fall. I booked an independent movie, drove out here to film it, and then never went back. They were really supportive until I was just, I mean, they were always supportive. They're really supportive and like were really encouraging for me to come out to Los Angeles until I just never came back.
Yeah.
I still go back for like a month here and a month there just to like when I'm writing and doing sessions or writing for country stuff or other artists. But there's no humidity out here. The weather's so much, so much nicer. I'm kind of, I don't know if I'll probably split time if like later on, if I want to have like family and stuff, I go back and forth, but I'm loving LA right now. When did you come out here?
I just came out here like 2 years ago. I grew up in California. Then I went to school in Mississippi for radio. And then my thought was, well, I'll go to where they make music. That seems like where you would go do radio. And then, so I was in Nashville from 07 till for 12 years. I did love Nashville, but, and it's funny because I always said I would never move to Los Angeles. Like it would never happen. And then I just kind of finally hit a ceiling. Like there was nothing else I could do. I had worked for every radio station in town. I could only ever make $40,000 a year. And it was just like, all right, I got to go try something else. And that's when I decided to make the move. And it was, I think it was the best move, you know, for me.
I think a ceiling's a great way to put it. I definitely feel that, like going back, like, you know, going back and hanging out with your old crew and, you know, family and, you know, going to all the same places. Like there's just so much more you learn when you go to like a bigger city and when you like the opportunities, and there's just a lot more going on. So when you go back there, you're kind of like, you get a little restless.
Yeah. One question I wanted to ask you, with a father who's such a celebrated songwriter, are you hesitant to go to him with like, what do you think about this? Just because he's written so many big hits? Or do you use it as an amazing resource that you can be like, hey, what do you think about, like, I need to turn a phrase here, or can't think of a, a bridge here. Like, how does that work with your relationship with him?
Usually, especially in the music business, like that's like the first industry anybody will work in to where everybody's offering their opinion on whether they like a song or what they think you should change or what they don't like. And so if you can get past that, I mean, every song is your baby, so mm-hmm. you have an emotional attachment to it. But if you can get that out of the way and just look at it from, you know, as many ears as you can get on it, it helps. So like, I don't ever take it too seriously if somebody doesn't like it, but you know, 90% of the stuff that you do, people aren't going to love. So you have to find that one thing. So with my dad, I've just always been, I've always played him or sent him emails of like full songs that are done. And he'll either be like, I'll get like a email or a text back after, with the MP3 and he'll be like, f***ing great record. Yeah. That's a f***ing great record. And he's always usually encouraging. And it's never like, oh, I'm not crazy about that. I don't really ask him, what do you think of certain parts? Because I kind of want him to just, you know, be like, hey, you could do this here. You could do this. So any kind of feedback like that, I always take positive, and he spends it as a positive. He's like, hey, you could really do this here. This might be cool here. But it's always like coming from a place of positivity and encouragement, because he's one of the first people to tell you negativity kills creativity. Yeah. He's got a lot of wisdom, which I always kind of ask him for. But there's definitely, you know, people in the, you know, A&Rs or people at the label, definitely, or you'll send them a song you're super excited about and they're like, no response, or like, I don't think that's the right direction. Not really crazy about this one.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh. After a few years of that, you kind of just write what you write and say, fuck everybody else. And if it resonates with you, and then I'm happy with it. You know, it's like, you can't please everybody. And honestly, the music that I'm making, the people that I was working with at like a label or whatever, we're not even in the same ballpark as far as what type of music. Yeah. But he's been such a great like resource for me to, you know, I mean, everything you write, you think is probably good until you get it in front of somebody that you really admire and respect. Getting them to get, like, give you a nod is always great.
You've got two different musical projects running at the same time, right? You've Chord Overstreet and then just Overstreet. For people that aren't familiar with your music, can you explain kind of the difference between the two?
Back when I was at this label, I was coming off the show, didn't really have a direction of where I wanted to go musically, what I wanted the sound to be. And it was kind of just throwing darts. I really didn't do the artist development to figure out who I was. I hadn't lived a lot. I'd been pretty much going from home to set for 5 years, 10 months out of the year. And then that was pretty much it. So I didn't really have a lot of life experience outside of work. Started kind of trying to write for what I thought they wanted music-wise, mm-hmm. what people were listening to on radio. And I could imitate a lot of things and I could sing like a lot of different people. So I didn't really have my identity. The moment when I was like, f*** it. And out of so much frustration, I started doing more experimenting, doing more of the band stuff because I wasn't getting a reaction out of the label. And so that's kind of how the band stuff came about, where I was just like, I played a bunch of acoustic tours, or just me and a guitar. After like 2 months of that, I was like, you know what? I kind of want to play a rock show and move around and have fun and like just listen to music I want to drive to. That's kind of where that stuff came from. But then the other side of me, when I'm going through something to where I need to, you know, self-soothe or therapy, you know, on myself, that's when I kind of pull the guitar out and I write something that's on the more emotional side. So it's like I have those two sides that love to have fun, love to have a good time, love to party and drink. And then there's the super sensitive side of me that I don't like people to see. And I can only do it when I'm alone, usually. So. But that's the songs that I feel like you listen to and you can hear 10 years later and it takes you right back. And there's a visual when you have this story in your head. Like if you can kind of listen to a song, close your eyes, you don't need a music video. You don't need anything. It's almost like the picture's laid out in front of you. That's like my favorite type of music to just listen to and kind of escape. I've always just loved that side of it. And I think the stuff that's real to you and genuine when you write it, there's no wrong answer. And people can't be, oh, well, I don't like that. It's just real for you. And if it's real for you, it's going to be real for somebody else, regardless who, you know, who shits on it. Like, there's probably a shit ton of people that are like, well, I don't understand this Bon Iver song. You know, he doesn't care. It means something to him. And it's like, you go back and listen to that music, and you can still go back and listen to Skinny Love, like the first time you heard it, and play it on repeat, and it's still not old. Versus I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It. Pop radio stuff doesn't have that timeless feel. It's still great music, but there's a date. There's like a, it feels dated now. If you go back and listen to an old Lady Gaga record like Poker Face, it feels like old pop.
There's definitely an expiration date or a shelf life on pop music for sure.
Yeah. But then there's also like, if you're at a party and you're like, you know, drinking, kicking it with your friends, the last thing you want to do is put a song on that makes you want to dive into like a 12-foot hole and bury your head.
Let's put on this Jason Isbell record and really get crazy, guys.
This song's called Elephant. Yeah. That's such a great song, but so dark.
Yeah. Hey, turn it up. This is a song about cancer. That song is beautiful, though.
It's such a beautiful song, but you can only listen to that. That's not like a song you want to play with a bunch of people. That's a song you want to like play by yourself and just cry.
For sure.
That's the type of music I like listening to, like James Taylor, just like stories. I like being told stories.
I'm the same way. I call it sad bastard music. I'm a very happy person, but for whatever reason, I like songs that like really tear you apart, you know?
What I've always said is with that type of music is people can't relate to the exact story, but everybody can be like, I felt that way.
Yeah.
Everybody can relate to the emotion behind it. And that's why I remember where I was the first time I heard Britney Spears, Oops, I Did It Again.
Yeah.
And I connected to that song on an emotional level. I was going through adolescence, and there was this girl in this Catholic school or uniform, and I wept. And it was Britney, bitch.
Time is a luxury for us, especially if you're a mom. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results. Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews? Were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com for 20% off with code GETDIME. That's dimebeautyco.com, code GETDIME for 20% off.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
You came into Glee on the second season. You said earlier in the show that you weren't familiar with the program. Once you got on set and started making the show, like, when did you realize that the show was iconic and was a barrier breaker?
I was just not watching any TV other than The Office at this time. And I was like, all I wanted to do was watch comedy. And I'd obviously been a huge fan of Jane Lynch from all of her work with Judd Apatow and stuff. But my sisters were big fans of the show. And like I remember going home from Los Angeles that fall, and they were watching it on TV, and I kind of passed through the room, and I didn't know. I was like, "What are you guys watching?" That was like High School Musical or something.
Yeah.
And then went to go, like, I went out and shot shotguns. We do every Thanksgiving with my dad and like shoot clay pigeons and stuff. I get to LA, go back to LA, and it's like 6 months later. My sister's like, oh, Cord, you should audition for Glee. You'd be perfect on it. They're doing a MySpace audition thing where it's like everybody on MySpace can audition for this role. And I was like, nah, I don't think that's not. And then in like 2 or 3 weeks of them trying to bug me about that. And then my agent hit me up and I was like, all right, well, if two people are telling my agent, he's like, it's a big show. Trust me. Just go in, bring your guitar, whatever. So I went in and did that. But how big the show was didn't hit for me until like the first episode aired. And then like the song I sang was in like the iTunes like, top. And I was like, what the f*** is this?
Yeah.
And then like after it aired, I went to like number one on IMDb and I was like, what is going? And then like slowly started going out into the world just like I normally would. And like I'd never seen anything that was that global and massive instantly to where it was just like, this is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
6 months after the show started, like, you know, Elton John, I was like meeting people like Elton John that I'd like listened to their music and loved their music forever. And like getting to meet Elton John and Elton John knowing who I was like, this is like the fucking coolest thing in the world. But it was just like, I had no idea what to expect. I was kind of shocked at that it was as big as it was when it was all going on. But I mean, as far as what that show did for every issue that hadn't really been talked about on national television, it was such a cool vehicle to be a part of something that was just, that spoke to literally every demographic. It was definitely like a culture change.
Is there a Glee group chat?
Actually, we do a Zoom call usually every Friday.
Yeah,
you and Sarah should hop on one of these nights. I mean, we do like, I think they're trying to bring like a new guest on every Friday to keep it interesting.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's like a bunch of the friends and folks that we worked with and like some of the people that weren't on the show that we worked with. Yeah, we all get on like I think it's like 10 or 15 of us and we just have a White Claw or a cocktail and just shoot the shit for an hour.
If you guys need a couple guests.
All those girls definitely know Sarah. They would love it if you guys jumped on.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you guys need someone to jump on, guess what? This might come as a shock to you, but we ain't got shit going on, dude. We are just hanging out.
Tell me about it. It's really fun. You guys should definitely come on and one Friday and bring a cocktail on and just hang.
Where are they? We're there, man. Hey, tell me about quarantine sessions.
Okay. That actually was like a week before everything was super locked down. It was maybe like a day or two after quarantine, but I just got the feeling like, man, if I could do anything to give back any kind of entertainment or something to take people's mind off of what's going on, why not? So one of my buddies came over with his camera and we just filmed a bunch of covers and or originals and just because we're not going to be able to tour or really do anything for the next ever, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows, it kind of feels a little apocalyptic. That kind of just came out of me just getting something out there. Then, you know, if I can't go out and play for people or can't go into sessions and can't do anything. I mean, I think music is, the essence of music is sharing it and like, you know, being able to connect with other people. So I think that's pretty much the only way you can do it right now.
Speaking of music, I know you have a crazy guitar collection. I was wondering, do you have a favorite guitar?
Well, this is one I stole from the show.
Yeah?
I would right in my trailer in between like when we were filming stuff and when we were cleaning out the trailer, I just took it with me and nobody ever said anything. I had props bring me a trailer and it sounds amazing.
What is it? Is it a Taylor?
It's Gibson.
Okay.
I got like a 55 right here, which is, I love this one. Gibson gave this one to me. I never get it back. I'm supposed to, it's a load and then Gibson cracked down on. But this is probably my favorite just because it's so warm. It's just, I got that when I was 17 from, it's a Martin DR, but it's a Dreadnought Rosewood, but I got it when I was 17 from my parents for my birthday, and I broke the headstock of it, cracked the headstock all the way down. One of my drunk friends kicked it over when I was back in Nashville one time, and I never fixed it, and it sounds even better for some reason.
Oh, yeah? I'm a Martin guy myself. I do love that warm sound of it. Well, hey, I want to be respectful of your time. Before I let you go, you have time to do a rapid fire question?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Rapid fire questions with Cord Overstreet. Number one, what's your favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni.
What's your favorite book?
Moonwalking with Einstein.
Ooh, I never heard of that.
It's not my favorite book. It's just what I read the most recently. It's about memorization. I like self-help books. One of my favorite books is You're a Badass and You Know It.
Okay. Who's your first kiss?
Can it be two people?
Yes. Wow. Were you on The Bachelor? What's happening here?
16. It was this girl, Megan and Stephanie.
You had a triple kiss when you were 16?
That's the first one. I didn't know what I was doing. It was their idea, and I was just, they were like, oh, you've never been kissed? And I was like, no. And so they both played it on me.
Damn. That's the most badass answer we've heard so far. Who would you call to get you out of jail?
My dad.
Who's your biggest mentor?
My dad.
If you won an Oscar, who would be the first person you thanked in your speech?
God.
Weirdest superstition you've got?
Ooh, that's a good one. I mix a shot of whiskey and tequila before every show.
Really? Like in the same shot glass?
Yeah.
What's that called?
A tequila?
Regret?
I was always just drinking whiskey, and then I started getting on a tequila kick, and I was just like mixing them up, and I was like, oh, I had a great show. And I started doing that. Huh? I started doing that for each show after that. I don't know.
Who's your celebrity crush?
Oh, man, Jessica Alba will and always will be.
And do you have a nickname? And if so, how did you get it?
A nickname, I do. My old roommate, do you know Glenn?
Yes. Pal? Okay.
We lived together for like 8 years. And like through this time, he started calling me Streeter.
Okay.
It was Street. And then it slowly became Streeter. And so now I don't think he's called me by Cord in a couple years, but it's just Streeter.
I like it. Streeter, thanks so much for being on the show, brother. It's good catching up. I hope that the world goes back to normal soon and we can hang out.
Yeah, if you ever want to talk about conspiracy theories, I'm all game for that stuff.
Next episode, we're having you back on and we're just going to do a conspiracy theory episode.
Let's do it.
Hey, everyone out there, go stream or download or buy or however the hell you absorb music these days, what you need. It's out right now. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you want to talk about or promote?
I don't know. It's kind of all blur. So much fun coming on here. We got to do it again.
Hell yeah, man. Just come over to the house and we can just come and have a beer in this room.
Yeah, I can do 6 feet things.
Yeah, that's good.
Thanks for having me on, Wells.
Yeah. So good catching up, man. I'll tell Sarah, you say what's up and be safe out there.
All right. You too.
See you, bud. Man, that guy's cool. I now know why we bonded so hard at that Vanity Fair Oscar party, whatever the hell it was, because we definitely started talking about music and our love for Sad Bastard music. It started happening again there. Anyways, Cord's a freaking cool dude. He's a really nice guy. He's obviously super freaking talented. It's not surprising that he is so successful. Anyone that freaking talented, yeah. Loved having him on. Seriously, go listen to his music. Everything he does is freaking beautiful. You guys be good out there. Be safe. And later. Let me give you what you need. Holding you tight on a high while I wait for the ball. Inside my heart to the train tracks just to get off. Say you gotta go like I don't know, nothing's changed.
Subscribe to Wellscast on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcasts. It's the internet.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.